Hello, everybody, and welcome to Connectivity, episode 318. Somehow we gained three episodes in a week. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me, as per usual, John Raritan.
Yes, after a short three-week break.
Yeah, after a short...
We are back.
Three episodes on one day break on April Fool's Day. To answer for his crimes against humanity, Alex DeFreitas is joining us for this episode.
Hello, everybody. Happy to be here for a regular one.
So John and I did not know that Alex and I guess friends of the show, I'm not going to call Matt a regular guest, even if
not
he's,
anymore.
He's, yeah, now he's an enemy of the show. Matt, enemy of the show. Joe DeVader, Matt Zawadniak, along with Alex, which I believe Alex was the ringleader, conspired to actually do the Castlevania Game Boy Advance Game Club that John and I like earnestly committed to back when its shadow dropped during the Nintendo Direct last year. And then I think a mixture of those games aren't as good as Metroid, and we were really burnt out on playing really good Metroid games that we didn't want to play what I think we both view, or at least Circle of the Moon, as not a terrible game, but a mediocre game, especially compared to the dope ass Metroid games we all played.
I view Circle of the Moon as an actively terrible game. But
for its time, it's fine.
No. No, I don't it no, I think it's bad. And that's okay. Man. I've heard they get better.
I didn't think
like,
I'd be
that one.
I didn't think I'd be
bad.
The defender. Really didn't think I'd turn into the defender of it. But
thankfully,
yeah.
I don't have an opinion because I didn't play Circle of the Moon.
So, Alex, how did that all come together?
Okay, so you said that I was a ringleader, but actually, what happened was that Matt and Joe were recording a stream. They were streaming Kingdom Hearts 2. It was like one of the multiple grinding streams that they were doing, and we were just like joking around. This is like early February of doing a Castlevania game club like April Fool's joke, because we figured out that Friday was going to, you know, we released these episodes on Friday, and that April Fool's landed on a Friday this year. And that, I thought it was just like we were just joking around, but then Joe starts a group chat and is like, are you guys for real? Because I will do this. And I'm like, okay. I have Rune Factory and Ocarina of Time to get through, and I'm in the middle of like the very last bit of Final Fantasy Tactics, so I can't join, but I'll edit. And so they record a Circle of the Moon without me, and we just like went from there and planned out, you know, just recording these episodes over the course of 2 months, just finding some spots here and there. And thankfully, they're like only 30 to 45 minutes long, so the actual final product. Is about,
yeah, I don't know how you guys manage to keep those so like whenever me and Neil do this, it's like a 3 hour thing.
Well, also, there's a certain point where why didn't you just put them all into one episode?
The joke was,
yeah,
that you keep on like checking your podcasts and it just keeps on showing up another Connectivity. that was kind of part of the humor of it. Like you'd wake up and like listen to it on the way to work or something, and then you have another one for like your lunch break, and then you have one for your trip back home.
I should check the download stats to see if we overwhelm people or not, or if we need to do three episodes every week now.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I don't
this
know.
This is now a daily podcast.
3 times a week. And also I think it was easier to like coordinate and record like that, at least for me. I mean, I couldn't, if I would have had to play all three of them and then remember everything about them in order to record an entire episode about all three. And something that we bring up in the Aria of Sorrow episode is that like they all kind of blend together, so it would have been a weird discussion to like go over three of them at once. So I think it actually worked out that we just did them separately.
Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, like I think it's a good bit, and I do appreciate the fact that you guys getting one over us wound up you guys producing like 2 hours of audio content.
Oh yeah, and that's
and like
a great
they were
thing.
Good episodes.
Yes, yeah. Yes. This is what I love about like Matt and Joe. They do this every year for Smashtrapieces. They always do an April Fool's joke episode of like a character that was heavily desired for Smash or heavily rumored for Smash that didn't show up, and so they'd record an episode as if they did show up, because Masterpieces is all about covering like games.
Yeah, because they did Halo. I know.
Yeah, they did Halo. They recently did Resident Evil 4. But like they completely work as standalone episodes. They work as content, not just as jokes, but they also work as jokes. And so I was pretty proud of the fact that they all kind of do work as, if you were interested in listening to our thoughts on those particular games, even if most of those thoughts were kind of sour, you've got content to listen to.
Yeah, I did think it was funny because as it became clear that we probably weren't going to do the Castlevania Game Club, we did get some people in Discord who were disappointed by that. And we definitely, like, we decided not to do it because, like, we were like, well, if we do it, a lot of this is just going to be us kind of bashing on these games that we know people like. So, like, that's not going to be fun for everybody. But people, like, really want us to do it. So I do think it's funny that, like, you guys really clearly, maybe inadvertently, illustrated exactly why we didn't do a Castlevania GBA Game Club.
Yeah, you actually didn't want that Game Club to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more fun when, like, when people enjoy the games, like, at least there's like a little bit of conflict.
Like, I feel like even like some of like me on Ocarina, it's not like I'm like, Ocarina's terrible. It's like, oh, I think it aged.
Yeah. Well, that's why their episodes were only 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Is that they all just, everybody showed up and went, so nobody likes this, right? Cool.
Yeah. I'll say
Joe's like, I think it's okay. Joe kind of liked them.
I was okay with Aria of Sorrow. I just wasn't feeling like playing a really grindy game. And that's just kind of the context that I was playing in. I just got off of like Rune Factory and Dark Deity and Project Triangle Strategy. It's like, I'm done with grinding for a little bit.
Yeah, no, you guys nailed exactly my issue with those games, which is it feels like it's not about being good at the game. It's about just playing it for long enough that you win by default. It's the same issue I have with turn-based RPGs. I don't click with it. Whereas the game like Metroid is actually about being good at the game and not just being able to brute force your way through.
There's like an elegance to some of like the, I don't want to, maybe streamlining, I don't know, how Metroid is just a little bit more uncomplicated, whereas I feel like some of the Castlevania games, it's just that like you have these level ups, all these different weapons you can equip.
Yeah.
It's like, it's There's almost
way,
like
way
it's
too loot many based systems.
Versus, yeah. I mean, that was my thing with, I remember playing Bloodstained and like Bloodstained really disappointed me because I'm playing it and it just kept on being like, and you can cook and you can do all this other shit. And I'm like, but I kind of just want to like romp around an action platformer. I don't want to have to worry about all these other things.
This isn't Breath of the Wild. Like, I don't need to simulate all the physics.
I do not
I just
need
want to
a
be able to run,
engine.
Jump, and attack. Yeah. Those are the things I want.
Speaking of Breath of the Wild, since we last recorded a normal episode, Breath of the Wild 2 got delayed to spring 2023. That's a bummer. Not a shock, but a bummer.
No. Yeah, I won some bets, so I don't mind.
Did you actually have like standing bets with people?
Not for physical cash.
Well, then you fucked up.
But
John.
I did have.
Don't devalue bragging rights. Yeah. Those are worth something.
Yeah, just like, you know, Coca-Cola bets.
I am speaking of Coca-Cola, I'm having some Coca-Cola Starlight right now. That is weird.
That's the second time that Coca-Cola Starlight has been brought up on this podcast. And if you want to get them as a sponsor, like, just do it.
It's a little can. They had them at Aldi.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Can you taste the space?
Does it taste like Coke?
I taste like Coke with graham crackers.
Okay.
Have you had the coffee Coke?
It's not bad.
No, it's not. It's like weirdly okay, and I hate that it's okay and that I kind of like it.
I do remember I only had the Coke energy drink that they had a couple years ago. There was like a Super Bowl ad with like Scorsese and Jonah Hill, I think. I think that was the Coke energy drink.
Yeah,
ad.
That sounds familiar.
That was terrible. Like that was like I had a sip and like spit it out and was like, nope, done. But Coke coffee was like kind of smooth. Like it kind of worked. I did not expect it to, but it was solid.
Hmm.
Anyway, back to Zelda Breath of the Wild 2. I did like Anuma's haircut. I feel like we need to keep on talking about that because dude looks great.
Yeah.
Always love an Anuma sighting. I think he's pound for pound, maybe one of the best creative visionaries in video games over the past 20 years. At least one of the most interesting, with how the Zelda series has kind of developed, since he kind of took the reins.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's weird because I just don't think there's that much to talk about with the Breath of the Wild 2 delay. Cause I know you guys actually watched some of our video discussion about the original Breath of the, well, I guess not the original, one of the Breath of the Wild delays.
I think it might have been the first one because
it was pushed to 2016.
Yeah, so I'm watching that. I'm like, it's going to get delayed again because it doesn't come out till 2017.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure how much your bragging rights hold up when you were like saying that maybe Star Fox in 2015 will move systems for the Wii U.
Keep in mind that when I said that, Star Fox Zero hadn't formally been announced yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
As of that time, that was, we saw like a blurry screen with Miyamoto being like,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, because that was before E3. So yeah, watching that back, and we referenced Star Fox and Metroid. We were like, maybe it'll be Metroid. And like, we were right. It's just that it was Metroid. It did not replace Breath of the Wild as much as I love it.
Both of the, did you see, speaking of Metroid and whatever, it's our show. After last week, I've no apologies. That the Shine Sparkers are trying to get together, yes, some like Metroid Prime Federation Force, and they like replied to a tweet from you from like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I joined the Discord.
Oh, they have the Discord. I'm gonna join that now.
When I got there, they recognized me. Oh, nice. I was like, hell yeah!
I followed the account.
I'm known within the Metroid Prime Federation Force community. It was like 20 people when I joined, but like that's the most people I've ever seen talking about Federation
Force. I just saw that they had the
way.
Tweet and kept an eye on it because I'm like, yes, I will absolutely be down for this. Let's go.
What's the Twitter handle? Let's shout it out to all 10 people that listen to this.
At Operation Golem.
Yeah. So go join their Discord and let's play some Federation Force.
Yeah, because it's hugely important to me to play Federation Force because it's the best game.
Yeah.
The best game.
Yep, the best
ever.
Game.
You heard it here first.
Yep.
Yeah, way better than that garbage Chrono Cross.
No, man, Chrono Cross is great. But before we get to talking about Chrono Cross, let's finish up with the Zelda stuff. So we did get some listener mail because with a Zelda delay always comes people heavy-handedly talking about Zelda delays and how it always happens. Which, I mean, let's get real, it does.
Yeah, like that is clockwork. True. There's a reason that I bet on this.
Yeah. And really, I think I settled on like last year that once Breath of the Wild was announced to be aiming for 2022 back at E3 last year, I was like 50-50 chance. Like yeah. I think there was a world where it could have come out this year. We're unfortunately not in that world. Go see one of the 14 multiverse things available in movies, and you can see a different world where Zelda came out in 2021 or 2022. probably the 2021 one, guess what, doesn't have a pandemic. Way better. But Chariot Goblin wrote in saying, with the news of the Breath of the Wild sequel being delayed, many have been saying that every 3D Zelda has been delayed. I've always assumed this was true. However, was Wind Waker ever technically delayed? I've heard many people say that Wind Waker was delayed from 2002 to 2003, yet the game was released for Japan in December 2002 and for the West in 2003. I was wondering if connectivity could clarify Wind Waker's development and release date history. Thanks and keep up the great work.
We had to do homework for this one.
Yeah. Crammed right before.
Which I was going to say, we both saw the email come in and went, okay, we got to look that up before the episode. And neither of us did.
But thankfully, we're part of a site that's been around since before Wind Waker released. So we have primary
sources. We have the technology. Yeah. So what did we find? I don't even remember anymore.
Oh, it seems like it was pushed back a month.
Yeah. Yeah. So
from February to March.
What we can tell is that Wind Waker was mentioned in North America as coming out in February 2003. It wound up coming out in March 2003. So I think technically there was a month delay. Other than that, I believe there was no official delay for Wind Waker. There might have been some internal ones, as we are also kind of discussing over the show. Majora's Mask, I don't think was ever publicly delayed, but it was definitely internally delayed because that game was supposed to come out like in 1990, like a year after Ocarina of Time, and then wound up coming out what, fall 2000. So Wind Waker, what was it, first announced E3 to, or Space World 2001, I think is when it got announced.
That sounds right.
And I don't think they attached
2001 or 2000.
No, Space World 2000 was the realistic looking Link and Ganondorf fight. Gotcha. So Space World 2001 was when it was revealed before the GameCube came out. And then it was E3 2002. It still didn't have a name yet. And that's when it was given the February release window for North America. So technically it slipped a month, but honestly, that could be more marketing strategy and positioning than like anything direly wrong with the game.
You don't delay it for a month for like fixing bugs or anything. That's more like the supply chain issue.
You've already gone gold by that point.
Yeah.
No, that's when they went in and took out all those islands and all those extra dungeons. They had them all ready to go, but they were like, no, we're going to delay it and get rid of all these. Yep. It's too much content.
You know what I'm excited for? Playing Wind Waker in the Game Club, which also related to that, in the spirit of us announcing game clubs and not finishing them, we are not doing the three. No, we're still doing the 3D Zelda game club. We're going to be doing Majora's Mask. We're going to record that episode at the end of April, so that'll probably go up. I think it might be like the last episode in April or the first one in May. I don't know how dates work. But then we might put a slight pause on it because we were kind of expecting to wrap this up in November. That's when we kind of assumed if Breath of the Wild 2 was coming out this year. It's probably coming out in November or around then. And also, fingers crossed, I think Wind Waker and Twilight Princess might be coming to Switch this year. Historically, Nintendo has basically released a Zelda game every year recently. And with no Breath of the Wild 2, like, I think we're going to get something. We might give it a little bit more time. We'll probably reconvene and figure out what the new timeline is for Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, and Breath of the Wild. We're definitely going to be playing Link's Crossbow Training. This also might be an excuse to do things like play Four Swords Adventure or, you know, other 2D Zeldas, just to kind of mix it up and have some fun before Breath of the Wild 2. I don't know. I would say even money that it's coming out March 2023, which would be 20 years after the 1 month delay of Wind Waker.
See, I'm thinking like November 2023. Like we're gonna get another delay yet.
I mean, not out of the realm of possibility. Although, like at that point, it will have been what, 6.5 years since Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Listen, this ain't Pokemon. Yeah. Like when it comes to Zelda, you get to take your time unless it's Majora's Mask.
We could fit in one more 3D Zelda. Zelda Battle Quest for Nintendo
Land. Oh god, dude. Ooh. Zelda Battle Quest rules.
That's can a we good
yeah,
idea.
It's very
all
fun.
Right. All right, Alex, I'm going to see you in like a week or two. We better play some Zelda Battle Quest. I'll bring the Wii U on the plane.
Cool. We'll do it.
Yeah, we should write in with your suggestions for what 3D Zelda like bonus content we should do. You want the Star Fox Adventures episode? You just let me know. We'll make that happen. Every Darksiders game? Sure.
Because maybe that's what we'll do is after Majora's Mask, we can do like some of those kind of side things. And then I guess basically my thing is, if they're going to announce Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, that's probably going to happen like around, well, E3 is dead. But it's very...
It'll happen this summer.
It is easier to me to be like around E3, even if E3 isn't happening, as opposed to being like, I don't know, like June-ish.
E3 is going to be like, you know how we just call floppy disks save icons now?
Yeah.
And like nobody knows what a floppy disk is. Yep. That's what E3 is going to be. We're going to talk about things getting announced at E3 long after E3 has been dead for a decade.
Yeah.
And we'll all know what it means, but like the children have no idea what an E3 is.
I have had so many people whenever I'm like, yeah, like Nintendo's probably going to announce that at E3. They're like, but E3 is not happening. I'm like, yo, like June. Okay.
Yeah. That's just what we called. Does it not say E3 on your calendar for that month?
We generally all know what it means.
We just abbreviate June to E3.
Even though June is faster to say.
Don't worry about it. It still takes less time than saying Jeff Keighley. So we'll stick with
it. No, man, SGF. That rolls off the tongue. Anyway, let's move on to some games that we've been playing. So John and I have been busy little game reviewers. You have played through Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, which I bought today but have not cracked open. So tell
it's
me
too,
about
too long of a title.
It is a mouthful. But I guess, like, you know, what are you gonna do? There's like all those other Lego Star Wars games. You have to differentiate it somehow. So
no,
tell
you
me.
Just the modern thing you do is you just call it the Lego Star Wars, and that's it. And it's like a soft reboot. You cast Christopher Judge to play Luke Skywalker, and he yells boy at people, and it's great.
And also for some reason Chris Pratt is in it.
Well, that's a given. Yeah. He's in most things.
Yeah.
I reviewed this. I think I might have one of the lowest review scores for it. Not because the game is bad. I think the game is good. I was planning to give it an 8 or an 8.5, but I hit against a huge, pretty big progress bug that essentially has rendered my primary save file for the game unfinishable. So that naturally, I feel like you got to knock some points off for that. So I gave it a 7. Once they patched that, which they did send me a tweet, because that's how patches are communicated now, to tell me that that is a thing that they have fixed and they are just kind of waiting for that patch to go through, it sounds like. So once that patch hits, then this is like an 8 or an 8.5 kind of game. Until then, that'll probably be your experience, but play the prequels first so that if you get stuck, you can just restart your save without losing too much content. Because the bug happens in the middle of Attack of the Clones, which is a shame because it's obviously the best Star Wars movie. So that's tragic that happened. But overall, I like it a lot. I particularly enjoyed the sequel stuff just because those ones haven't had Lego Star Wars games before. So the other ones kind of feel like, you know, they're new stuff, but they're definitely homaging things that they've done in past Lego Star Wars games. And it's, you know, a tale as old as time. But for the new ones, you're getting, you know, legitimately, with the exception of The Force Awakens, you're getting, you know, a completely new experience. And for my money, it's the best way to experience Last Jedi.
That's the part that I'm kind of fascinated by, and because this might be the only way I ever experience Rise of Skywalker again.
See, I think that's why, like, I would argue that I think the sequels work better as Lego games than the prequels or the original movies, because, like, you can like Last Jedi, you can like Rise of Skywalker, you can like Force Awakens, like that's all fine. You do you. But like the writing in the sequels is dumb.
It is like, it's almost like it was written for a Lego game.
Well, Lego games are like built around non sequiturs as comedy, and like the entire sequel trilogy is just a series of non sequiturs.
Yes. And none of it, like, none of it matters.
They're just here now.
Right, exactly. And that's all jokes that as a Lego game that plays really well.
Chewbacca just blows up and then he's just back.
Yeah. Like
he's dead and he turned the corner. She's like,
when in Last Jedi, when Leia gets blown out into space and has to force fly back to the ship. In the Lego game, she just pulls out a fishing rod and fishes herself back into the ship. And it's like, yeah, this moment's kind of dumb looking. And like the Lego game is just like, yeah, it's dumb looking. This is even
worse.
They
lean into it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it works really, really well. So, yeah, that's been the part that I've enjoyed the most. All of it's well done. It has all of the problems that Lego games have always had, where most of the best content is gated behind you unlocking a bunch of characters. So your first few hours with the game aren't as fun because you can't do most things, which really kind of limits the more open world areas. But once you do get through a few episodes, then it really starts to get better.
Does the DLC characters, can you like access those right away?
Yes, so you can. And I know this because one of them caught my eye, which is that one of the Mandalorian DLC characters is Cara Dune, which
Is that allowed?
I was surprised Who? To see her in the game.
I didn't know she was a character. Is that like an EU thing?
Is that an yes. OC?
I mean, technically, yes.
Legends?
Recent Legends.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I'm very interested to see how they handle the fact that, like, a character is just gone now in Mandalorian Season 3.
But she's part of that DLC, which I thought was bizarre, because it's not like there's any story content that would require her to be there. I think it just goes to show like how many millions of years this game has been in development for that they were like, we're not taking her back out. Yeah. Like, this is everything that's in there now is staying.
Everybody had to crunch to make this model, so we have to keep it in now.
Did the writers like make a joke about her disappearing? That's what I'm expecting.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I assume, I mean, she wasn't like she's already kind of separated from the main story by the end of season two anyway.
Yeah.
So like they can kind of just not encounter her again and like that won't really cause a problem for the plot.
She was supposed to be in the spinoff that now I think is never happening.
Yeah, she was maybe the most interesting character in that show, but like that's okay.
She was a very interesting character. It's a shame that the actress is an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, like most actors is an idiot.
Yeah.
And thank God we don't fire all of them for being idiots or we'd run out of actors. But yeah, pick
well, that's, your battles, that's when, I guess. That's when we have our, oh no, wait, are we idiots too? Shit. Joe and Matt can star in everything. They're flawless.
Yeah, there you go.
Who would make a better Cara Dune, Joe or Matt?
Joe,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Joe would be fantastic as Cara Dune.
I think Matt would be a nice Din.
Maybe Ahsoka. yeah, casting Matt as Ahsoka. What were we talking? Oh, Lego Star Wars. It's good. I like it. I hope they fix it. It looks pretty nice on Switch and runs fine. The cutscenes are a little jittery, but like the actual moment-to-moment gameplay is fine. I did find one of the things you can unlock in it is a CRT filter, but the CRT filter is tied to the rendering resolution of the game. So when dynamic resolution kicks in, like the grill of the CRT changes sizes and it's very disorienting, which is weird because normally a filter like that would literally just be an image pasted on top of the screen, not actually be tied to its rendering resolution.
Yeah, it's like be a PNG, that's, right?
Right, exactly. So it's kind of weird that happens, that it's like generating it in real time, but whatever.
I feel like with Lego Star Wars and it running fine, I'm very impressed by MLB The Show 22 on Switch.
Me too.
It bafflingly like just runs pretty well. It's not a looker. I'm not gonna look at this game and be like, oh wow, this looks as good as the PlayStation version, which I think some people were intimating that that's what you were saying, John, despite your ample warnings
There's always that guy in the comments that doesn't
the person
get
who's
it.
Like, I think the PS5 version looks better. It's like, yo, we do too.
Yeah,
it should. Yeah.
This one doesn't have shadows, like of course. Weirdly, the shadows only cold when playing online, apparently.
Yeah.
So that's.
But it's the versatility of it and the fact that like it did kind of adapt to make crossplay work. By doing things like that, like, and for even in, you didn't use some of like the slideshow parts of when we played, and there was like an inning where I was pitching where the input lag was dreadful.
Yeah, and that's kind of harder to see just on like the footage end of things. Yeah.
You can see like there's like I think it's like the start of an inning where I just pitch four balls in a row, and the last two of those were literally I would just aim across the plate. Just go outside. But like it works. Like that's the thing, is that like it just works. It's very workmanlike on it, and the fact that it is an acceptable game. And even outside of online, which honestly, I don't think I'm going to do a lot of the crossplay stuff. I do have an Xbox and it is on Game Pass. So if I ever really want to seriously play it on TV, I'm just going to play it on Game Pass. And the cool thing about that is I haven't used it myself, but JP Corbin from NWR, he bought it on Switch. He also has an Xbox with Game Pass. It's apparently like super easy to just cross save. So you can
awesome.
Take your franchise with you on the go, and then when you're home, you can play it on your Series X.
That's perfect.
Like that stuff is magic. And like handheld, like it just works really well. And I've been playing a ton of Diamond Dynasty so far. That has been my main focus in playing the game. And it's the fact that like there's just so much to do. And it is probably something to be said that like this is a game that has been extremely well received on platforms for 15 plus years or whatever. I don't know exactly how long it's been running. I know I played it back in like the late 2000s was kind of the last time I played it more consistently. But the Diamond Dynasty mode is basically their take on like the ultimate team stuff from FIFA and Madden, where you have cards, you know, you're building a team. There are microtransactions, but the way this game does it is way more interesting and friendly. And I mentioned this to you, John, that like when you go to the place where you can like buy the in-game currency, there's a note where it's just that like, yo, you can just get this by playing the game, but if you want to spend money, knock yourself out. Like it's
yeah.
the phrasing
yeah we
of
are
that,
gonna stop you
yeah the phrasing of that was what struck me, because it really like, and having spent a lot of time with it, like yeah, like there is definitely like, yeah, I mean, I guess there's like incentive of like you can just go buy a bunch of the in-game cash and then use it to buy a bunch of like packs of cards and stuff, but for the most part, like no, just by playing the game, like you level up, you get bonuses, there's all these different things to do that you can accrue money to buy stuff, or like complete a quest and you get like a pack reward or whatever. And it's also pretty lenient in the beginning, although I did the code that we got was I think like the digital deluxe version, so I think it came with some bonuses, so I'm not sure exactly how well stocked you'll be right off the bat if you're buying like the normal like regular price version. But like I have a decent enough team of players, and there's like a baffling amount of modes, and I'm not even doing anything really playing online. I'm generally in sports games, I'm a guy who plays single player. Like I will play a lot of franchises, offline franchises, and Madden. That is my jam. And the single player modes for Diamond Dynasty, there are a lot of like 3-inning games. Like I can do like a mini season where it's like made up fake teams, and like just playing quick 3-inning games where like the pitcher's stamina is kind of mapped to 3 innings, which makes some of the strategy kind of interesting. And it's just like a lot of these quick games to get through. And then you level up, you can earn new characters, you can mess around with your roster, your lineup, your pitchers. It's like really snappy. The weirdest thing is there's like an RTS game baked into Diamond Dynasty where it's a territory control thing. So you'll have like a hexagonal map and you have fans that then you like move across the map like it's a tabletop game. And your goal is generally like you'll have reinforcements that you can then distribute to the tiles that you have, move them around, and you're usually competing against initially just one other team, and you're kind of just trying to control the ground and then eventually take the spot of that, like fight the team in 3-inning baseball combat. And then take the map. Later maps, it's like I think I saw one map that's literally you have to like work your way through all 30 teams. And depending on how many fans you have, it's fans are like the currency that you're moving around in this mode. Like you might have to like beat it on super hard, or if you have enough fans there when you're attacking the other team, you could like beat them on rookie. It's just like, it's really cool how they have all these different modes to play the game. They also have Road to the Show, which is, you know, you create a player, you start in the minor leagues. That means, John, get ready for when I record that footage. There will be my asininely created big bearded first baseman pitcher named Neil Baseballer.
It wouldn't be a Neil Ronahan sports game review without some horrendous creation
footage. He's got like a doofy mohawk, but I mean, it's baseball, so usually his head's covered. But like going through that mode where you'll kind of like, I'm a first baseman pitcher because Shohei Ohtani, for those who don't know, the outfielder pitcher on the Los Angeles Angels, he's the cover athlete. So, and he's a two-way player. So I'm a first baseman pitcher, so I will like sim through where it's my at bats and doing some fielding, and then when I start, then my knuckleball pitcher takes the mound. And what else is there? March to October, which is a mode that I haven't gotten too into, but I think that like that is like you control the team and it'll kind of like simulate your way through the season, taking you through big moments. what impresses me the most about MLB The Show overall, to kind of wrap up, I could talk a lot more about it. Baseball is a game that people always commentate on. It's way too damn long and boring. And if you just want to sit through and rock through 9-inning games, you can totally do that in this game. But it has all these other ways that you can experience the game in kind of almost whatever time you have. Like, there's 3-inning games. They can take like 15 minutes if you're, you know, it doesn't get, it can go really quickly. You can do like, you know, go take your road to the show guy and just play one game where you have like, you know, your 4 at bats and a couple base fielding things, and that'll take you 10, 15 minutes or whatever. There's all these ways that you can get just that bite size experience that is baseball gameplay. There's not a lot of sports games that do that as effectively. I'm like sincerely blown away by how well this game is made. I think it might be the most complete like sim sports game I've ever played.
Yeah, and I'll just throw in I was very fascinated by the fact that when we started checking the frame rate on it, that it wasn't 30 frames per second. It's just entirely unlocked. And so the game at times was hitting like 50 frames per second, which makes me feel like if a Switch Pro were to ever happen, I feel like with a little, like with a few tweaks, there is a possibility that this port could hit 60 frames per second, at least during like actual gameplay, not like the cutscenes. And that's crazy for a game that was definitely designed around PS5 and has only just recently started coming to other things.
Yeah, like I didn't know. I think I was talking with someone on Twitter about who helped porting this. I think it's done in house by Sony San Diego, which like,
I only saw the one logo.
Yeah, credit to them. I might dig a little deeper to see if there's like a look at the credits, because that might have like, oh, we got assistance from Panic Button or whatever.
If it was Panic Button, it would have anti-aliasing. this doesn't have, there's a certain look to Panic Button ports, and this ain't it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, regardless, impressed by Sony San Diego's ability to kind of downport this game. And I guess they might have experience with that by doing like Vita versions and stuff.
True.
And I think there's...
Yeah, and they only recently just... I mean, they were doing PS3 versions for a long time.
Yeah.
Alongside the PS4 versions, so... maybe there's an old version of the engine floating around. Not that a PS3 engine would work on anything else ever, but you know.
Yeah, it's really a great game. What also is a great game, maybe one of my favorite games of all time, is what I've kind of settled on. Chrono Cross,
just below Federation Force.
Yeah, just it's Federation Force and Chrono Cross on equal footing for me. Chrono Cross, the Radical Dreamers Edition, is will be out on Nintendo Switch by the time you hear this. The first time that game's getting outside of a PlayStation release, which is it's awesome. I love Chrono Cross so much. You can go read and or watch my review of the game. I love the hell out of it. I loved it when I played it 20 years ago and was pleasantly surprised to see how much it still holds up, in my opinion. The music, I feel like, is the one thing that, like, and even if somebody's like, oh, the game's garbage, you'll be like, but the music's pretty good, because the music is incredible. I did not realize this was a point of contention, but for anybody worried about the remastered music that has been floating around, when you play the actual game in this, it is the original music, which is perfect and didn't really need remastering. It is actually cool to hear the new arrangements, I think. But you don't need that. The original game's music is just so incredibly good. The things about Chrono Cross that I think probably hold up more to just people like me who think that the weird manipulation and tweaking of lore that happens throughout that story is just like incredible and weird and awesome. The battle system is super, super good. And it works on it in that like you don't have a traditional level up system. You instead... it's not like Saga where it's like, oh, like you'll get a random stat boost. It's just kind of as you play, like you'll complete a battle and then everybody kind of gains a hit point, maybe like a point in attack or whatever. And just as you use characters, they get a little higher. They'll kind of cap out of a certain point, but then as you complete another story objective, you'll go up a star rank and then can, you know, upgrade people even further. but you have attacks that are tied to like a hit meter. So you'll have your stamina is 7. You can do a light attack, which would take 1 stamina and generally will hit every time. Or you can take the risk and do a heavier attack at 2 or 3 stamina that will have a lower hit rate. Like kind of off the bat, it's usually like your first attack will be like 99% and then the next one will be 75% or 65%. So you can take a gamble and try to do heavier attacks, but you know could miss. As you do that, you build up like an element meter. That element meter is kind of tied to your like magical abilities. And those are all different colors that there are strengths and weaknesses for each one. And every character is innately one color. So like Surge, the main character, is an innate white element, which is stronger against black elements, and black elements are stronger against it. But you have all these magical abilities and you have it set up on like a tier list. So like tier 1, you'll have like 4 options, then tier 2, you'll have 3. As you progress through the game, more tiers unlock, you'll have more ability to have more, you know, abilities and elements and everything. You can only use those once per battle, generally speaking, which makes an element of strategy that I, you know, kind of replaying it now, I'm really confused that no one's ever done this battle system again, because it's really cool. And the way that they do the battle boost that they did for this game differently from how, like, I feel it, like in Final Fantasy VII, it's like you just click a button, you got limit break, everybody's healthy, it's great, you're invincible. In this one, it just drastically decreases the hit rate for enemies, and then you can use elements at any point. You don't have to like build that up by doing physical attacks. But you still need to strategize, or else you'll have to grind out the battle. And I just like that because it does make it substantially easier, but it doesn't make it brain dead.
Yeah.
In addition to Chrono Cross, Radical Dreamers is also localized for the first time ever, and this is the only time the game has ever been available outside of that Satellaview in Japan.
Yeah, that's wild.
And I think that Radical Dreamers is I'm not a big visual novel guy. It's a decent visual novel. That is mostly fascinating because of like how it sits in between Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross. Just the fact that it's localized is incredible. And it is a game that if you get this, I 100% think you should check out. If you want to know as to when to play it, if you are familiar with Chrono Cross's story, play Radical Dreamers right away. If you are not, I would recommend playing Chrono Cross first and then playing Radical Dreamers.
Cool. Good to know. I do have a question about Chrono Cross in general. Like, I know that you have like 40 characters in your party at some point. Like, that's the end.
You don't have all. So this is 45 is the number. You can't get every single one in one playthrough.
Oh, okay.
Like that. Like, interesting. I feel like a pretty early example is that like you are looking for someone to take you to a place. You essentially, in that moment, you have the option of picking 3 characters. You pick one of those characters, the other 2 you cannot have in that playthrough.
Even then, you might still have like 20 people in your party at any given time.
Yep.
Is there like a way to like make sure that everybody is up to speed, or do you basically have to choose, these are the 4 that I care about?
I think there's one thing that, I mean, I don't think it's that bad, especially with it being an older game. So when you do have a lot of characters, like kind of juggling who has what elements can be a little annoying, because like when you like move people out of your party, they still have all that stuff equipped, that's like something that like I feel like a ton of RPGs probably still do that, and definitely did it back in that era. It's like a little minor thing, but as far as I know, I mean, a lot of it's based on, like, I think it's pretty easy to get a character up to speed if you ever are at a point. Grinding isn't really a thing that I've ever really done that much in this game. Usually it's more optimizing what kind of attacks you have. Like, without going into too many details, like there's a black elemental boss pretty early on that I even going through this playthrough, I'm like, oh, getting up to that guy. He's really tough, but if you go in there with a lot of white elements that are strong against that and kind of setting it up in the right way, because there's also the whole mechanic of like, if you do 3 white elements in a row, then you'll turn the battlefield white, and then the white attacks will do more damage. So you can kind of set stuff up like that. So
strategy is more important than stats in this game.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, not that stats are worthless, but I don't know 100%, but I've never run into that much of an issue with switching around characters. And I definitely switched around characters a lot more on this playthrough than I did. And like my Surge, for example, was definitely like a level above everybody else in my party, but it wasn't that sure. drastic.
And do the characters like fill particular niches, or are they all kind of freeform?
They all have different innate abilities, and people have like unique techs. So like if you're familiar with Chrono Trigger, how there's techs there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like single techs, I guess, and there are some combos. But I don't think there's that many overall, but when you can execute them, it's kind of awesome, because it is just kind of like syncing those up and finding the right party. It's also, I saw one of the complaints that people kind of talking about this game, you know, it's always been there, but now it's more top of mind, about how a lot of the characters aren't like relevant to the story, which I noticed it more in this one, is that because I purposefully went out of my way to do characters I don't really remember engaging with in previous playthroughs. And I found a lot more moments where I'm like, oh, okay, like this character is actually connected to this guy. I didn't really know that when I played it before. And it is true that, like, I mean, you have 45 fucking characters. Right. Like, not everybody's going to be perfectly relevant to the plot. And there is, like, the core plot really only involves a few characters that you play as. But I don't think it's not that, like, every other character is short shifted. It's just that, like, you might have to go out of your way to, like, find out, you know, what makes the rock star Nikki tick.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, yeah, you're going to find out what's going on in Surge's life just by playing
Sounds like
the damn game.
Fire Emblem to me, where you will have like a cast of several dozen characters, yeah, and you might like find a support that will give you some more information, but you have to go out of your way. The main story is not going to feed that to you. That's something I'm very used to.
And it's also something that like what is also kind of striking me more with this. And I'm working on a piece that you're actually, you know, credit where credit's due, helping me out by getting some Chrono Trigger footage for it. I'm trying to like figure out like why does Chrono Cross resonate with me so well? And I've always found this with like media that I like is honestly, my favorite TV show of all time is the show Party Down, which is a very funny show, but is also like thoroughly depressing because it's basically about a bunch of people who are like failed actors working at a catering company. Like there's an undercurrent of like depressing sadness to that show, especially the Ken Marino character. I have some friends who have told me that like they can't watch that show. It's like too cringy, but for me, it's brilliant. And I think a lot of things that I like usually land in that realm of like, it's there's goofiness to it. There's humor to it, which there definitely is in Chrono Cross, but there really is an undercurrent of tragedy with like every character. And it is something that like just that sense of loss. I think it kind of works, especially in context of the story, which not going into too many details is really centered on like, you know, what past decisions have affected me now and stuff like that, and how fate in the universe all works together. The comparison that I kind of landed on that I like as far as like how Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross are similar but different is that like Chrono Trigger is this time traveling like raucous adventure. Like you get in the epoch and you're going around and you're saving the day, you're gonna stop Lavos, it's incredible, look at this is great. And Chrono Cross is like, yo, homeboy, you died 10 years ago. Like, we got to bounce between these two different alternate worlds and try to figure out how to prevent the universe from just blowing up. I don't know. Everything sucks. Whereas Chrono Trigger is like more like rah, rah. We're teaming up and doing this. Chrono Cross is just like, shit's fucked. And it worked. And I like the contrast of the two a lot. And I think they work as... I know Chrono Cross has even been called by some of the creative team as not a direct sequel to Chrono Trigger, but it is definitely a follow-up. And I think history, whether the creators want it to be as not like Chrono Cross as a sequel to Chrono Trigger, sorry guys. But I think they work better than people historically have always said that they do. Like there is connective tissue there, even if it isn't 100% direct.
It's the Empire Strikes Back. of the Chrono duology.
Yeah, and they just never made the Return of the Jedi.
I was gonna say they need to do a third one that's exactly like Chrono Trigger again, so that it can be like the sequels where like one guy made one movie, another guy came in and did something totally different, and then the last guy was like, "Fuck you, I want to do my thing again."
Yeah, Yuji Horii just comes in as being like, "Get this sad crap out of here, Kato."
Yeah, go get help.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, Chrono Cross, it really, the more that I think about it, and I even made it, I didn't plan to have the YouTube video title be like, is Chrono Cross the best PS1 JRPG? Or I think I phrased it as like the best PS1 RPG on Switch or something like that. But I was thinking about it, I was like, you know, like Final Fantasy VII is pretty good and everything, and I like a lot of other RPGs on PlayStation 1, but Chrono Cross is my favorite. Like, there's really no contest. And if I start to extrapolate that, like, yeah, I'd probably call Chrono Trigger on paper better, but I think there's things of Chrono Cross that I like more. And I think if I were to go sit down and hash out, like, what are my top 25 games of all time, Chrono Cross is probably on that list and probably way higher than I would have thought it would be.
It's always good to like go back to a game that you really loved a couple decades ago, and it's like it still holds up and is even better than you remember it. Because too many times I've had the opposite experience.
I mean, I literally had that. We talked about it on the show with Ocarina of Time, which I don't think Ocarina of Time is bad. I just I'm like, oh, I don't like it as much as I used to. Which is like I still can think of Ocarina of Time and think of how I experienced it in 1998, how I on 3DS in 2011. Like, those will always be near and dear to me, but I don't know, Chrono Cross for me, like, you can see some artifices of the fact that it's an RPG from 20 years ago, but, I mean, part of the nice thing about this remaster is some of those artifices are smoothed over. Some of them aren't, but it's just, I love this game so much.
I may wind up getting it purely to, I feel like you've, like, because you did, like, Torna and stuff, so I feel like I need to find... I need to play some games that you like that I probably won't, so that I can then keep guilting you into playing games that I like that you probably won't.
I mean, it's $20.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. It is one of those things where it's like, it's a, like, PS1 JRPGs are a huge blind spot in my gaming knowledge. So playing a modern version where I can cheat a little bit sounds like the best way to play halfway through and then stop playing.
Yep. Yeah, no, I totally recommend doing that.
And I did. I got through Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, I mean, Chrono Trigger is also like, I don't want to call it like the bubblegum pop of like JRPGs, but like it kind of like, because Chrono Trigger just like glides by. Like, it's such friendly. A smooth game.
It's like, very it's so well paced, and like there's constantly something new happening. I never felt like and it's been a while, but I don't remember ever feeling like there was a spot where I was like, God, I've been here forever.
Chrono Cross, I'll be real, Chrono Cross has some of those moments. there's definitely like a part in the middle that I got to that I'm like, oh yeah, like this is a little rocky, but like I think the opening to Chrono Cross like is real solid, and then like there's a lull in the middle, but then it picks up near the end.
Sure.
Yeah. So you'll get to the lull in the middle and then stop.
Yeah, that's and then fair. I'll pick it up a year later, and it'll be like my continual, like I have a continuous replay of Xenoblade 1 where I play the first half of the game up to Aerith Sea, and then I stop playing, and then I pick it up and finish that and do the rest of the game and then stop, and then I'll restart. Like, I just always, that's the Council of Elrond of of Xenoblade. As I get to that point, I take a break and then come back to it later. And I think that's probably pretty classic of JRPGs, is to have that lull in the middle.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely, I think about that, like, Final Fantasy VI, I'll get to kind of the midway point on a lot of replays. Chrono Trigger, I'll usually, I think we were talking about it before the show, that, like, Chrono Trigger, there's, like, the back half of it. I've probably only played, like, two or three times in my life, but I've played that first 5-10 hours many, many times.
Yeah.
They should release Chrono Trigger. Now that Chrono Cross is out on Switch, I'm just going to be knocking on the door being like, hey guys, remember? Come on.
Release Chrono 3.
Yeah. Chrono Break. That was always the rumor.
Okay.
I think the series is done. It was, I have been like, well, one, Square Enix, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but as Square Enix is trying to take our job from us. As far as I can tell, I think they like hired some writers to do a lot of like marketing content on like, it's almost like PlayStation blog-ish. But they have had some really cool stuff there where it was actually, this one was literally a PlayStation blog from one of the producers on Chrono Cross talking about the process of remastering this, which apparently took like over 3 years because they were planning to release this for the 20th anniversary in 2020. I mean, the pandemic probably got in the way a little bit.
Sure. But if they were planning to like finish it at that point.
Yeah. But they were talking about the process of trying to like get the, because Square Enix just has a really bad history of not preserving a lot of games. I mean, there's the thing with Trials of Mana. I think that Super Nintendo version only exists because Nintendo had it. Square did not have that. Nintendo was like, oh yeah, we have the like the Super Famicom version or the Super Nintendo version of this that like you didn't release overseas, like here's the ROM. But for Chrono Cross they had to like rebuild some of the game from scratch because some of the stuff like there were like tricks that they used on PS1 that they just didn't really have well documented. And like it was like they had to kind of brute force it because they talked about like how they had to play through the game like kind of side by side to see where the differences were.
Wow.
And then like work around that. So it is, I mean, and that's why I see a lot of people being like bagging on the port. And I'm like, one, like it just plays like it's a fucking PlayStation 1 game, which that's what I want. Like,
yeah, PS1 with faster loading.
It's almost more impressive that like they didn't have all the PS1 assets and yet it still feels like a PS1 game because they were basically rebuilding it from the ground up.
Yeah. It wasn't like totally from the, but like they had to do a lot more work than you would expect. And then also, I mean, the fact that like, you know, Masato Kato, who was like the writer director of Chrono Cross, like I think he had some involvement in this. They brought back the composer Matsuda to do some remastered tracks that I will repeat because people got very upset about this, that the original the game in here it has the original songs. It's just that they got Matsuda for this release to do some new arrangements that are all pretty good. It's nice to see them kind of treat Chrono Cross with, at least to me, the respect and accolades that it deserves.
Yeah.
God, I love this game. I love this game so freaking much. another game that I am absolutely adoring, and I'm looking forward to getting deeper into it. I'm not done MLB The Show yet. That review I still have to write. Now that like the I'm not like ODing on Chrono Cross and MLB The Show. I look forward to getting back to Kirby and the Forgotten Land, which
Kirby.
Alex, so have you 100%ed it yet, or are you just...
I am at 95%.
Jeez.
This game has surprised me so much. I usually, as soon as I roll credits, I love rolling credits. I love the feeling of beating a game. But once the developers give me permission to put the game down, I typically move on to the next thing. I have like a really big backlog. There's a lot of games coming out this year. And yet I cannot put Kirby and the Forgotten Land down. It is so good. It is so good. I've beat all the post-game stuff, and right now all I have to do is like finish up like side objectives and collectibles to get that final 100%. I am loving this game. And in fact, my brother started playing it, and I've done like two worlds with him as well, Bandana Waddle Dee, and I've been having a blast. It's just so well designed. It's adorable. It's super fun and breezy. And I think it's just exactly what I needed after a bunch of like the Castlevanias and the Rune Factories and like art, the strategy RPGs, just something nice and light and happy was just, it's been perfect. And it's gorgeous. And it runs super smooth. There's obviously like the frame rate weird thing where like something in the background will be moving at 5 frames per second. Yep. But it still looks fantastic. I think that doesn't really bother me.
Well, and that's the it worth noting that that's on purpose. Like that, yes. It's not like the game is struggling right. to render the background. Like that is an intentional issue. Optimization. Yeah.
Sure. I guess it gives you more draw distance, so things are not like popping in as much. My guess is that that's why it's there. I'm having a blast with this game. The one I guess issue that I have is that it definitely seems like they pared back a lot of the abilities. Like you only have a dozen, as opposed to the 20 plus that you might have in a regular 2D Kirby game. So not having Fighter in there feels bad. I like Knuckle Joe. Not seeing him in the game was a bit of a disappointment.
Some of the copy, like there's a limited suite of copy abilities, which I can understand.
Yes.
But I did get to a point where I'm like, I saw them all. And I do really love the copy evolutions.
Mm-hmm.
And then even those, like some of it goes away when you're like, oh, it's just the enemies, but like a new skin. They're cool though.
Yeah. And I will say that the copy abilities feel like they matter a lot more in this game than in the Kirby games I've played previously. Because a lot of times it just felt like you get this ability and maybe with fire you can like light up something, just fire yourself out of a cannon. But most of the time it's just like, what do you want to play with right now? And in this game, there's the levels feel designed around the copy abilities, and the copy abilities have a lot of functions, like the freeze ability, ice ability. You kind of skate, and you can skate along water or lava even, and they use that to great effect. Same with like tornado, they might create like a platforming challenge around using your tornado ability properly and like controlling that. It's just super well designed and a blast to play.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'd agree. Right now I'm in, how many worlds are there?
So I'm trying to hold back and like not talk about specifics because it's such a recent release. But I guess spoilers, there's like 5 worlds, maybe 6, and then an extra post game world.
Okay. So did I get out of the snow world? No, I'm in world 4 right now.
I'm through world 2.
Yeah.
Water world was world 2, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then it's the amusement park and then the ice area.
There are a couple worlds post ice area, and then you'll basically be the end game, then the post game.
Cool. Yeah. Yep. It's been a slow ride. My son has been loving it too. The one thing that I'll say about Kirby, and it impresses me, especially after reading, oh, it's not the Iwata Asks RIP, but like the interview that they had with the developers, they do such a good job of making it approachable for kids.
Yeah.
Like it's baffling. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like it's easy, but it's very friendly. And like watching my son play, like he's actually been playing a lot of the demo. Because I have it physically, so I've been playing it on my system. He's been playing the demo on his. But like just seeing him kind of like go through there and like actually be able to beat stuff, it's been really, really fun. And like seeing him actually kind of solve puzzles and stuff. Even if it's a little bit brute forcing where he gets he loves the rectangle, which is the vending mouth.
Yes.
And he's scared of the Gorimondo, the monkey boss, as he refers to it, and usually throws the switch at me to beat the monkey boss. but he also loves exploring Waddle Dee Town, and because of that, I've seen like how much fun you could have just bombing around Waddle Dee Town and just exploring it there. We actually did the Colosseum, where mm-hmm. he would basically like fight enemies, and then if it was a harder boss, he'd just hand me the controller.
Nice.
But like it's something that I feel like Nintendo has a really good handle on, especially for stuff like Kirby, that like it wordlessly communicates so much without being overbearing with it, and to the point where I don't think it's dumbed down. It's the way the game's designed, and that's how I felt Kirby games have been for a while, in a way that like they're just fun rides, and I think this might be the one of the better rides that I've ever had for a Kirby game.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I think it belongs in the same conversation as Mario 3D World or Mario Odyssey or Bowser's Fury for me. It's just endlessly playful, and it keeps on throwing new ideas at you in each, like, just course. And no idea lasts for too long. You'll get through a very short vending machine part. You'll get a couple of secrets. You'll move on. You'll be a traffic cone. You'll skate around lava. You'll do the Treasure Road stuff. Have you done the Treasure Road stuff?
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. They're so good.
It reminds me a lot of the Break the Targets that were built around like specific characters in Smash Melee, where it'll take a copy ability or a mouthful mode, and it'll create an entire, whether it's an obstacle course or some sort of challenge, where you have to get really good at using that ability. And if you want to get the target time, which it's razor thin margins on getting the target time a lot of times.
But it's also not necessary for 100%, right?
No, it's not. It's not. But it does give you a nice check mark. So if you want an excuse to play more of the game, which is what I'm doing, it has it there for you.
Yeah, no, I had a moment where I was like, I gotta get that. I'm like, wait, what's the benefit? Like, no, I got my little stone. Like, okay, I get some more coins. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
The stone is an important part, because that's what you use to upgrade abilities. What else? Oh, the Waddle Dee Town it's fantastic. I think some of the mini games aren't perfect. I don't love the one where you tilt the marbles around. I find that those kind of be annoying, but the arena is very fun, and it's just beautifully constructed, where it's just kind of fun to hang out in. It's the opposite of the Rune Factory 5 problem, where it's just like, I don't want to be here. Waddle Dee Town, I want to hang out here all the time.
It's such, so chill, man.
If you want to go like see just one of the videos, one of the cutscenes, you go into a movie theater and talk to the Waddle Dee, and he like basically like sells you a ticket, and like it points you to your seat, and you sit down and you watch one of the cutscenes. That's how it's presented to you. Have you gone to the fishing part yet?
No, I have not gotten the fishing game yet, but I think I'm very close to it. I think I might have like I do have a thing of like, oh, when you get like 100 and whatever Waddle Dees, something else opens up.
Yeah, so it's just a very adorable way of doing fishing. All it is just like hitting button prompts. Basically, not exactly Simon Says, but like you'll just see a button prompt and you just have to hit it. But the way Kirby is animated and like the faces he's making, it's just so cute. It's one of those games where like, sure, mechanically it's not super demanding, but because of the world that they constructed, because of how gorgeous it is, because the music is so amazing, and because the levels are so thoughtfully designed, it's hard to put it down. And the fact that it's kind of short, I'm sure some people might find that upsetting, but it makes it easier for me to dive in and do the post game, because it hasn't overstayed its welcome.
Well, it's short, but it does feel like there's plenty. I mean, like if you want to go back and do more, like I feel like most levels you won't get everything on your first try.
No.
So there's usually a, like, you can pretty much go back through the whole game. Yes. Well, and I always have my one complaint about the game is that how often a level gates behind you. I'll get halfway through and then realize like, oh, I had to light all the candles. And then I can't get back to the first candle.
I do feel like when I get everything in one run on a level, especially as I'm later on, I feel so good, because it's kind of dumb luck, but it'll be like, oh, I explored this the way the game wanted me to.
Yeah. And it's fun to pick up on the little design ideas, like, oh, I understand how the developers are making this game. And it's like cool to be like, yeah, I know that you wanted me to pick up this tin of sardines or when I'm in bird.
I do like, yeah, one of them is just like you're in the weird like air bubble boat thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, have a meal at sea, one of three. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
And it's great because I feel like I get 80% of the Waddle Dees my first go around, but there's usually one or two that I missed. And I feel like that's a good balance to where, like, I don't feel like this game is so brain dead that I'm not having to pay attention at all. Like, there are some ideas going on that maybe, like, not mechanically, like, this is going to be very difficult, but, like, it's challenging your ability to explore and to discover things. And exploring in 3D spaces in video games is, like, one of my favorite things to do. So this game has been great for that.
Yeah. No, I definitely want to hop into it and finish it up. And it's also something that I'm kind of slow burning a little bit because I'll play a lot of the levels with my son.
Yeah. And Banana Waddle Dee is actually, like, I think at first the fear was that the second player was going to be, like, basically just Bowser Jr. from Bowser's Fury. But there's a lot more that Banana Dee can do. Like, he can collect. He's got a spear. So anything that requires, like, a slashing ability, he can do. So it's definitely, like, the game is built around Kirby. So Banana Dee is very much tethered to Kirby. But it's a lot more fun than I expected to be playing my brother's file and being second player and just, like, kind of taking in the scenery and, like, picking up on the things that I missed my first time going around. You have a lot more ability to interact with the world than I first expected.
It's just, what a delightful game. Very happy it came out.
Yes, this is the most engaged I've been with a Kirby game in since Superstar Ultra.
Robobo is real good. But I feel like Robobo is still just, like, very good 2D Kirby, whereas this is definitely, it's something new, it's something different.
Yeah. Yeah, this feels like something they could build on.
Yeah. And I hope they do. That's connectivity for this week. So next week, I don't know, we'll figure something out. I think we have some embargoes going up next week, so stay tuned. It'll be fun. And then the week after that, I will be away. But then the week after that is Majora's Mask.
Yo.
Do you guys have any other, like, April Fool's things you want to do on the week while Neil's not here? Do you want to upload three more episodes that week?
Humorously, I will be, 45 minutes away from Alex during the recording for the week that I'm out.
Why don't you just go record with Alex?
I'm seeing my wife's family. I don't necessarily want to be like, oh, guys, by the way, bye. Gonna go hang out with my internet friends.
Yeah, but it's Alex. Did you tell them that it's Alex?
I did, and my wife was like, who's that? I'm like, he does the podcast with me. At least Mitchell, former NWR contributor. I guess he's still on staff. I don't know. Mitchell's in Dallas now.
We never formally fired him.
Yeah.
He just got, like, a real grown-up job and didn't have time for us.
Yep. I mean, my wife's met Mitchell, so maybe I'll just pretend Alex is Mitchell.
There you go. Everyone's Mitchell.
Yep.
Just call me Mitch.
He's a nice boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll do it for connectivity. You can email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport. You can hit us up on Twitter at @connectivitynwr. Oh, apparently we're doing a Star Trek podcast soon.
Well, maybe. Let's wait and see if Star Trek pulls back on their decision to do NFTs.
Oh, the NFTs. Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
Star Trek Club. Let's go.
Yeah. Star Trek Game Club.
I will play the Super Nintendo Star Trek games for a Star Trek game club.
I don't think I've several ever of the PC played this. Games. I'll play Bridge Crew. I've got my Oculus. Well,
you
I guess
should
my,
play
my
Quest. Star Trek Starfleet Academy on, like, it's on Super Nintendo, but it's also on, like, 32X, and it's just, like, a really cool. I mean, it's a bridge simulator game, but it has, like, 3D graphics, and it's neat.
Anyway, that's an episode of Connectivity. Thanks for listening.
All right, bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.